Hello, and welcome to A Comic Book Tesseract, the weekly comics netcast that's bigger on the inside than it is on the outside. Every week, we review and preview the world of comics, along with other facets of geek chic culture. I'm Jason Polioff. Unfortunately, my usual co-host Justin will not be joining me because of the holidays. We'll do a quick show this week, since it's just me. So let's go ahead and get started with Captain America and Bucky number 624, by Ed Brubaker and Draco, and art by Sam Lee. Enjoyed this book. I was actually hoping for a bit more as they explored Bucky's time as the Winter Soldier. This was more of just a summation, and a lot of it we'd already been told. It does deal a bit with Bucky and the Black Widow Natasha's relationship. I would have liked to see more in that. Overall, this book felt kind of like a filler issue, and since there's a new creative team starting up next issue, I was wanting more out of it. I did enjoy it, but I was really hoping for more. I was hoping we'd get a couple of issues like they'd done with Bucky's World War II series, where we get to see a couple of his individual adventures as the Winter Soldier, as opposed to just a brief summation of his first mission and then moving on to, recap a couple of other big things going on. There was one wonderful emotional moment where, as the Winter Soldier, he has to perform an assassination, and there's some collateral in there that he has to avoid. And so that really gave the story some heart. But I felt if that had been a whole story on its own, taking the whole book or most of it, maybe, two Winter Soldier stories throughout the most of the book, and we get to see some more of those type of adventures as full stories, more in depth than just kind of an overshadowing, it would have been a stronger book. Also from Marvel Comics this week, I read Wolverine and the X-Men. This is part of the Regenesis arc with Wolverine starting his own school for gifted mutants, where the Xavier School had once stood. This picks up right where the previous book had ended, with the school under attack by the Hellfire Club. I found the art got a little bit confusing and hard to follow at times in this book. There was a lot of humor, which I did enjoy. Pulled it off much better than they did in the first book, which felt like a bad sitcom. This one, they actually had some smart lines, and there was some snark. They start to show you Iceman and just how powerful he can be. He is considered an Omega-level mutant, which means he has lots of power that actually they point out is untapped in this book. So he starts to show you, they certainly put a new spin on Iceman's powers and just how powerful he can be. Be interesting to see where they'll grow that, if they do continue to grow it, or if it was just a one-off for this issue. So I did enjoy it. The art, again, was kind of hard to follow. Overall, though, I think it was a strong book and certainly worth picking up if you're an X-Men fan. Or if you've been trying to get back into, trying to get into Marvel and you're looking for a Marvel book, Wolverine and the X-Men 1 might be a way to do it. I didn't feel it was as strong as Uncanny X-Men, though. So, moving along, we have Vertigo Comics. And Carrie and Gross have brought us yet another issue of Unwritten, number 31.5. They're now doing these books bi-monthly, so we'll get a 0.5 every month as well as a full number, which I think is an irritating way of numbering books, but this was actually a side story from the main story. The main story, of course, we finally got Tommy to take actions into his own hands. He's come out to take on the group that have been controlling literature. And I was hoping to get that again in this book. And so my first thought of this book was a little bit let down because it doesn't continue with that story arc. On the other hand, this is done as a 0.5, so, realizing that and that, from what it looks like they're going to do is the 0.5s each month are going to be backup stories to the ongoing story that's in the full numbers. Now, in this, they actually start to give a history to the cabal that Tommy's been fighting, that it's been slowly been revealed throughout the main story arc of the book. So we start to get a history on the Cabal, how and where it was formed, how it's changed over the years. And it kind of pits that these are just major points in the history of the Cabal. They're not the full history. And, that it certainly goes back further than where this book initially starts up. So, it certainly does deal with the Cabal and, a group of people saying, this is what you're allowed to read, this is what you're allowed to write, this is how we're going to control your thoughts. It goes all the way back to, Gutenberg in the beginning of the print press. It actually deals with the printing press and, thoughts, that people were scared of back then and even before the Gazette. The actual history starts way before then. And just, the idea that when you start to let people read, they start to educate themselves and they become smarter and harder to control. And so as a theme, I thought it was really great. It was told well, but it was just kind of a shock to not be continuing the initial Tommy Taylor storyline that they'd been doing the last two issues. And I think that's because this is a 0.5 issue. I'll go ahead and move on to The Dark Knight, which is a Batman title. We're now into DC Comics. And David Finch's artwork in this is amazing. He's always been doing a great job on the artwork. And now that he's got Paul Jenkins co-plotting with him and actually writing the dialogue so that he can focus much more on just doing the art. This story is getting richer, and he's introduced a new character, the White Rabbit, who is kind of teasing Batman, just like Alice in Wonderland. Alice never caught the White Rabbit, and he'll never catch me. Of course, it's Batman, so we can expect that at some point he will. It's just a matter of what happens once he does. And it deals with him realizing that there's a poison that is both a combination of Scarecrow and a combination of a flower, which leads him to start hunting down Poison Ivy. And so next issue, we're going to see what happens when he confronts Poison Ivy about this. In the new universe, she is actually a member of Birds of Prey, which Batman apparently does not have the best relationship with in this new universe, as opposed to the previous incarnation of Birds of Prey, where the birds were defenders of Gotham. They worked alongside Batman, were led by Oracle, or Barbara, also known as Barbara Gordon. So, certainly there's been a change in the dynamic of the teams that way, because he says he doesn't trust the Birds of Prey, and I would certainly believe with Poison Ivy on it that that's something that he's got against them. And we'll go ahead and take up DC's flagship character of Superman now in his own Superman title. And this continues the arc that George Perez has been showing us of these beings that are speaking in Kryptonian that are, for the most part, invisible, and Superman has to fight these. One of the things that this does nicely is recap and tie into Action Comics, which is taking place 5 years or so prior to the Superman title, and it kind of gives you a recap of what's going on in that book. So if you hadn't read it and you needed a history of Superman, you get it from just reading this title. So it's nice to see the universe filling out that way. That's one thing that I've kind of felt lacking in some of these books is sometimes, because they're done in different timelines, it doesn't always feel like they're in the same universe. So pulling that in certainly helps. And you can see that this is really going to be, pulling in the two previous issues, and we're finally going to start getting some answers in the next issue from this. Nicola Scott had some beautiful artwork in this, and she stepped in to do this one issue, and it'll be a different artist next month, but I think she did a wonderful job stepping in here. I'll go ahead and move on to All-Star Western, which is DC's Western comic book. It's actually been taking place in Gotham, so for some reason it's in the Northeast rather than in the West. But Jonah Hex, who's the main character, certainly helps it live up to the Cowboys and Indians Western reputation. He's a ex-Confederate soldier bounty hunter who's raised by Indians. And you know, this, while continuing the story in the previous two issues, has made a change. And the first issue was actually told from Arkham's point of view. The second issue kind of dropped that. In this one, it was nowhere to be seen. I missed that because it was nice to see Jonah Hex viewed from somebody else's point of view. The story actually had an individual's viewpoint instead of an omniscient viewpoint. And it did something kind of odd because in the first two, it was about finding the hidden group behind Gotham and the crimes that they were committing and the fact that they followed the crime Bible and trying to build Gotham into a city that worshipped crime. And they deal with that at the beginning of this, and then it just kind of moves on because Hex is there to collect the bounty on some people. It felt kind of jarring in the change in the storyline, and it could just be that they'll bring it back and you know, they'll bring back the crime Bible. It could just be they were building a, you know, mythos for Gotham in the first two story arc, or the first two issues. And now that they've kind of established that, they're going to let Hex, you know, go after these, yeah, real nasty. That's one thing that, Justin Gray and Jimmy Palmiotti did really well in creating this is they've created a bastard of a character in Jonah Hex. And, yeah, for as bad as he is, you know, we start to see just that both the people that are building Gotham behind the crime Bible, as well as the outlaws that he's there to collect the bounty on, are even nastier than he is. So, you know, they do a wonderful job telling it. Mortat's art fits this book great. It's got the coloring is faded and has a little bit of a sepia feel in it. And overall, it's just a wonderfully produced book, one of the best books of the 52, I think, even though it's called Western and does not take place in the West. It'll be interesting to see in the next two or three issues if they leave Jonah behind and start following some other characters. As with issue number two, they did have a backup story featuring El Diablo, and that actually was just a two-part story. It actually finishes up in this. And overall, it was okay. It was good. It probably would have stood on its own as its own comic, so it makes it great as a backup comic. May have also been a great way of introducing the El Diablo character for him to take over the main story arc or be introduced in the next issue. And that's also written by Justin Gray and Jimmy Palmiotti. So, you know, they did a great job with that backup story. And, yeah, if they're going to use that to introduce El Diablo either into the main story arc of All-Star Western or as the next character that they're going to follow in All-Star Western, I think it's great. I'm hoping to see some sort of attachment with that to what comes next, though. I think if it's just a standalone, unless they're going to continue running El Diablo story arcs as the background specifically, and they'll let other characters move through, but they're just going to use El Diablo as the backup story arc. Yeah, I just want to see something more done with it than just here's a backup story, and we're not going to touch it ever again. Lastly this week, I'm reviewing Green Lantern New Guardians. Tony Bedard wrote this with Tyler Kirkham doing the art. And in this, Kyle Rayner has actually, for some reason, gotten the rings from all the different emotional spectrums. And in this issue, he actually tries to use them, only to realize it's just not powerful enough and breaks down and loses them. And yeah, meanwhile, the Guardians, are more upset that he has the rings than trying to resolve why they chose him, why they went to Kyle Rayner. We've seen that in the previous issue, we saw Gantt had all his emotions removed. And so they're building towards something big. And yeah, actually, at the end of this, we start to see Larfleeze attack the Guardians, as well as the members of the other Corps come looking for their missing rings. So, there's something big building here. This didn't have a whole lot of story development, but it certainly is setting up a lot of pins for future arcs. I'll be very interested to see where this goes. You know, I've been enjoying Bedard's work for a long time. And just getting to see all the different creatures and all the different cores. You know, with them, well, with this being the new Guardians, it'll be interesting to see what they're doing. You get to see just how powerful the Guardians themselves actually are when they wield the power of will. So overall, I think this is a book that you're going to have to keep reading because it's going to keep building and keep growing. I'm really looking forward to it. You know, Green Lantern's been one of the strongest families of books that DC has had for a long time now. And this just goes to show that it's well worth picking up and reading the Green Lantern family books, Green Lanterns, Green Lantern Corps, and Green Lantern New Guardians. Yeah, each one has its own feel, you know, and it's certainly a different book from the others. But, you know, they each, you know, are certainly connected with the Green Lanterns, and they each have their own main character. So it's interesting to see how they interplay with each other as well, even though they're their own individual stories. So go ahead, pick up some comics, enjoy your reading. If you want to reach us, you can find us at thecomicbooknerd.com. You can also Twitter to us. Reach us on Twitter or follow us. Justin is Felix T. Cat. That's Cat with a K and two T's. I'm J. Polieff. You can also email us at comicbooktesseract@gmail.com. Or you can leave us a voicemail or text us at 50Tesseract. That's 508-377-3722. I'm Jason Polieff. I hope you've enjoyed this edition, albeit short, from the holiday of Comic Book Tesseract. And I hope to hear from you next week. Take care.